Hello, and welcome to the Aon Retirement and Investment Podcast. I'm Jennifer Michelle.
And I'm John Harney. This month, as well as covering the usual pensions news headlines, we'll be chatting with, wait for it, our first two guests from outside of Aon. And who better than two professional trustees, Natalie Winterfrost from Laudabenture and Colin Richardson from Zedra. And we'll be learning all about professional and sole trusteeship.
Before we get on to that, John, I've noticed you've been participating in a lot of our pensions conference. So I wanted to ask you how that's all been going.
Yes, you've been spotting me on LinkedIn. Yes, it's been going really, really well. Thank you, Jennifer. So actually, when this podcast goes out, we'll have completed all six of the series. And yeah, it's been brilliant just speaking with people and finding out what's going on in their pensions world. So a great time. Have you had a chance to join us at any of them?
Yeah, I have. I actually attended the London one last week. And no, it was great. Really, really great day. Great conversations. And definitely something I'm going to get involved with in the years to come as well.
Oh, brilliant. Well, we'll see you there next year. And I'm really, really glad you enjoyed it. But I think we should probably get on with the breaking pensions news headlines for the month. The Chancellor delivered the 2024 spring budget on the 6th of March. The headline measure was a 2% cut in employee national insurance contributions from April 2024. On pensions, he set out proposals to require DC schemes to disclose how much they invest in UK equities. To support investment in the UK, the Chancellor also announced the launch of a new UK ISA and British savings bonds.
The DWP has published its consultation on options for defined benefit schemes. It considers increased flexibility for surplus refunds, a 100% PPF underpin option, and a public consolidator. The government wishes to support schemes to invest their surplus in productive assets by making it easier to share scheme surplus with employers and scheme members, and to remove practical and behavioural barriers to this. The consultation will run until the 19th of April. The pensions regulator has published a consultation on its proposed approach to the statement of strategy, including a proposed form of the document and the type and extent of the information that will need to be submitted. So the statement will set out DB Scheme's long-term funding strategy, as well as their approach to managing associated risks. The statement will be required for DB Scheme valuations with effective dates on or after the 22nd of September 2024, and this will be alongside their actuarial valuation. This consultation closes on the 16th of April.
The Women Against State Pension Inequality, also known as WASPI, is a group which has been campaigning against the way in which the state pension age for women was raised in 1995 to match that of men. The issue they bring forward is that this rise was not properly explained by the DWP at the time. Women born in the 1950s were made aware of the changes almost 14 years after the original law was passed, deemed too late for any additional financial planning. In March, the Parliamentary and Health Service Ombudsman issued a final report stating that, and I quote, thousands of women may have been affected. And the Ombudsman was, and I quote again, taking the rare but necessary step of asking Parliament to intervene.
Now moving on to our special guests. As mentioned today, we're joined by not one, but two professional trustees. We have Natalie Winterfrost from Laudabenture and Colin Richardson from Zedra. So welcome both to the podcast. So just before we get in and start having a bit of a conversation, I was wondering if you could tell us, you know, a little bit more about yourselves and give us a brief introduction. So maybe if Colin, do you want to start us off here?
Thanks, Jennifer. So I'm Colin Richardson. I was an actuary for many years and moved into professional trusteeship 10 years ago with PTL, which became Zedra 2 years ago. I've worked on many schemes, defined benefit and defined contribution and master trusts, schemes large and of more modest size, and also a mixture of leading trustee boards and also corporate sole trusteeship.
That's great. And Natalie, what about you?
Well, like Colin, I'm an actuary. That's where I started my career. But I moved into investment and investment consulting and then asset management and did my CFA charter and decided that my next career step should be trusteeship about 3 years ago. But like Colin, I sit on boards across defined benefit and defined contribution and some very large schemes and also some smaller schemes and a DC master trust. And although I do more co-trustee work, I also do corporate sole trustee work.
Brilliant. And I suppose on that note as well, Natalie, we've got a whole raft of listeners to the podcast, and I saw some might not be familiar with what professional trusteeship is. So I was wondering if you could give us a little introduction to what it is exactly.
Yes, of course. So possibly the easiest place to start is what the pensions regulator says a professional trustee is. And that's a person whose business includes trusteeship and who represents themselves to one or more unrelated schemes as having expertise in trustee matters generally. But that's a bit dry, isn't it? So in practice, having a professional trustee means that there's someone with pensions expertise sitting on the trustee side of the table, whether that's one or more persons around a board table or as the corporate sole trustee.
And then I suppose building from that, because that to me sounds really, really good to have that professional presence there on trustee boards. And I don't want to lead the witness, so to speak, but what in your view are the main benefits of having a professional trustee on or making up the total of the schemes board?
Well, as a professional trustee, we've seen most things. And if we haven't as an individual, then we work for firms with many other colleagues that we can share experiences with. So generally, nothing is new to us in the world of pensions. And we bring that expertise to the boards that we work with. And that helps ensure that the right things are on the agenda at the right time. And really importantly, it helps us to challenge the advice we receive so we can make sure that it's fit for purpose.
And so we've heard a little bit about professional trusteeship, but Colin, I was wondering if you could tell us a bit about sole trusteeship and what that is exactly.
Yes, thanks. Well, sole trusteeship is a particular type of model of running the trusteeship of the pension scheme. And with what has been the conventional way with the trustee board, you have a board of trustees made up of different individuals or representatives. But the employer has the right to move to a corporate sole trustee model. I say corporate because sole trusteeship is normally not a person. It is a company, normally a professional trustee firm, and that firm acting as the sole trustee. And that has to be completely an independent body, independent of the employer, and then that assumes the whole role of the trustee board. There's no change in the duties of a corporate sole trustee compared to a trustee board, the requirements on them, in fact, with being professional, if you might say, an additional onus on being independent and seem to be independent. But it's decided upon by the employer, and it's the employer who would appoint the corporate sole trustee.
That's really interesting, thank you. And could you sort of talk a bit more about those benefits of having a sole trustee?
Yes, well, it's quite a different model, and those people who've not come across this before, they have to sort of imagine it in practice. It can be a bit strange when you come across it for the first time, but it's not one person making the decisions. It would be a team of people within that professional trustee firm, and that team would be likely assigned to that scheme with a lead person, but that team would then be supplemented by other members of the trustee firm you know, when needed for a particular circumstance or someone who's particularly expert in a given area. And then mm-hmm. that team would have to establish their own meeting patterns and interfaces with the various parties. So they would have, you know, meetings with the employer at certain regularities and meeting with advisors, whatever pattern suits the business and the matters pertaining to the scheme. And one of the important advantages is it can be much more in real time rather than a quarterly meeting cycle. Mm-hmm. It's very easy for internally for the team to get together at any time at short notice. And, you know, if they need to speak to the employer about a matter, they can arrange a call with the employer, and that automatically becomes a trustee employer meeting without, you know, convening a large board.
Yeah.
There are other benefits as well, such as with the entire trustee team being professional trustees and their support staff, then, you know, part of the advice process might be a bit speeder, a bit slicker, because when you're coming through a concept, say for example, you're considering GMP equalisation, well, that trustee team would have considered GMP equalisation on many other schemes, and therefore a lot of the background and so on can be taken as known, and you can get, you know, quicker onto the specifics of the scheme, the specific decisions for those schemes. So there's an element of efficiency in the advice process as well.
That's so good to hear, because it sounds to me like there's compelling arguments for both the presence of a professional trustee as well as sole corporate trusteeship. And I'm a glass half full sort of person, but I suppose we should talk about challenges. And I suppose I'd be interested in your thoughts on what the key challenges might be for a professional or sole trusteeship. Natalie, I don't know if you want to start us off.
Yeah, happy to. I mean, I think there's less perceived challenges as a co-trustee where you're one voice around the table. I think generally we get more challenge in the corporate sole trustee appointments or the external mm-hmm. perceptions of it. I think, as Colin already said, it's new to many people and they can struggle a little bit with the concept. So one of the challenges might be that you're appointed by the employer to negotiate against the employer on occasion, things like funding yeah. valuations, whenever there might be M&A activity. So how truly independent can you be when you know that it wouldn't be that hard for the employer to turn around and replace you again? So, you know, that is something that one has to manage, but a business wouldn't be sustainable as a trustee business if it didn't do the right thing in that role. I don't know if you want to add anything on that one, Colin.
Well, I do know what you mean. I think most professional trustees, you know, if they become appointed as a corporate sole trustee, they're so very aware of the duty towards the members. I mean, we're aware of it all the time in our trustee work. But if you and the team with you are solely responsible for those decisions, you're acutely aware of that responsibility. And mm-hmm. it sometimes, you know, if you're in a negotiation with the employer and that negotiation is difficult, and that, you know, the trustee is pushing for something and the employer is really against what's being asked for, it might be, you know, the thought perhaps might cross your mind, well, you know, this the employer might not think too greatly of me for pushing so hard and so on. How will the employer think? But I don't think you can seriously alter what you're doing because of any perception about it might make the relationship difficult. I think you're too concerned about achieving the best and most appropriate outcome for the members. I think in practice that overrides it. But I would agree that there is a potential perception out there that some people have, and I think from time to time the regulators express this perception that the corporate sole trustee might sometimes have too cozy a relationship with the employer that made the appointment. So I don't think it's true in practice, but I think there is a perception issue which we have to overcome at all times.
The other potential challenge of corporate sole trustee model is, like Colin's explained, you have a firm of pensions professionals behind the trusteeship, rather than what might be a more diverse board, particularly in terms of their backgrounds, that would be around a co-trustee board. So that's something for the professional trustee firms just to tackle and make sure that they've got that diversity of thought in the team on any scheme.
I would note here that for the professional trustee, the two situations are actually quite different. So if I'm working on a team, on a corporate sole trustee case, you know, you're working, you know, as that team, you are, it's a little bit like if you're working in a consulting firm and you're working as a team on things and you are, you know, checking things and moving along, you are where needed, allocating the work between you and so on. And it's quite a different situation to a trustee board when you're a co-trustee. Different skills are needed when you're on a co-trustee board, because you have, if you are chairing the board, you have all the chairing skills required and the people skills needed in bringing out the best of the board and being making sure all the board is included on all decisions. And you've got that whole panoply of chairing skills and leadership skills needed, as well as the trustee expertise. With a corporate sole trusteeship case, you're not chairing a board. You might be leading your internal team, but that is different to leading a trustee board. So I think they're quite different in the skills required, and arguably being a co-trustee requires those additional skills of chairing a board and leading the board.
So just looking to the future, I wanted to ask you both, how do you personally see the evolution of professional trusteeship going?
Well, I think it's going to change fairly considerably. It's changed a lot in the last few years. And I think the proportion of schemes appointing a professional trustee will increase further. It's already the majority of schemes, but I think it will increase further. Occasionally, the regulator has toyed with making it mandatory, but they've never gone that far to have a professional trustee. I think the proportion of corporate sole trustee schemes will also increase steadily. I think there's different statistics at the moment about how many schemes are in that position, but maybe it's reached 30% or a third. But I think it will rise further as schemes go further on their journey plan towards whatever end game solution they're aiming for, and schemes become a little bit less BAU with a long-term future and a bit more project-based for how the scheme is going to achieve its end-game situation, post-maturity, whatever that may be. I think we're going to see tightened requirements. I think the regulator sometimes expresses a bit of concern about the standards across the professional trustee industry. In a measured way, I think the regulator will be looking to monitor the firms more so it understands the current levels, and looking to tighten up and make the accreditation perhaps a bit more tighter, a bit more detail in the accreditation before someone's accredited through the APPT. So I think they're the main changes, but some of those changes can happen quite fast. And at the moment, we're awaiting the outcome of the DGBP consultation on the future trusteeship, and that will signal the intention in the medium term.
I would agree with what Colin said there. I think as particularly defined benefit schemes move forward and are less and less about remuneration of existing employers, and it's a deferred or pension or workforce, that the companies running those schemes want a business-to-business relationship. And the onus on trustee boards to ever upskill does make it increasingly difficult for companies to find people to put on a traditional trustee board. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, although, as Colin says, regulators and policymakers have stopped short of insisting that there's a professional trustee, I think it is becoming increasingly difficult for a scheme to justify that it's all got all the skills and expertise for everybody who it can find from its own employee workforce or from its member-nominated directors. So there was only continued growth in professional trusteeship.
And it would be great to have you both back on the podcast in a year's time and see if your answers to that question has changed. It's quite interesting. Thank you both. It's been an absolute pleasure having you both on the podcast, and thank you for taking the time to speak to us.
My pleasure.
Yeah, thank you very much. Thank you.
That's all we have time for this month on the Aon Retirement and Investment Podcast. We're really keen to hear from you, our listeners. So please do get in touch with your ideas on what you'd like to hear in future episodes or anything else that you'd like to share. You can find us on LinkedIn or just email us at talktous@aon.com.
And if you've enjoyed this episode, please be sure to subscribe. You can subscribe on all your podcast streaming platforms and share with your friends, even leave us a podcast review. We'd really appreciate it. And we'll see you next month for more pensions and investment news. So bye for now.